the Progressive Radio Network, your home for thoughtful and informative information.
Everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have a great show for you today. My guest will be Karen Pearl. She is the president and CEO of God's Love We Deliver, which is a wonderful nonprofit organization in New York that I'll tell you more about in a little bit when she comes on. But first, of course, I want to go over some things going on in and around the area, as well as things going on in the news that I want to share with you. First off, in the news, there was a great article on the health benefits of maple syrup and that maple syrup may actually help kill cancer cells. But the fake stuff that most people buy as maple syrup, like Aunt Jemima, actually is horrible for you. It's filled with corn syrup and artificial flavors, etc. So when you have an opportunity to get real maple syrup, and this is something I've actually, for over 30 years now, I've been, you know, pushing restaurants to give people the option. You know, when they say it's too expensive, it's like, well, you know, offer real maple syrup for an extra dollar or an extra $2, whatever. But there's plenty of people out there that would take that option. But the Aunt Jemima fake stuff you really want to stay away from. But the good stuff is really good. Also, I was really surprised to find out that many foods that we think are pure really have fillers in them, such as I wrote about the five most common food frauds, one of which is olive oil. Very often, instead of olive oil, they'll cut it with canola oil or other cheap quality oil. Coffee, ground coffee. I was surprised to hear this. Ground coffee may be filled with ground acorns, sawdust, or even ground corn. So, again, you know, you really want to look at your food labels, know the sources of where you're getting it. If you're getting organic, you certainly have a better chance of having it be pure. When it comes to coffee, of course, you can get the whole beans and grind them yourself. That's the best. But you really want to just know the ingredients that you're using, and I talk about that all the time. And, of course, the same goes with GMOs. You know, we're still pushing for the labeling. Sign those petitions. On my website, I always have petitions to sign because there's so many issues out there. And the ability to be able to just sign a petition so easily online really makes it so easy that there's no excuse not to do it. It's also very easy to call your representatives and let them know how you feel. Right now I wrote about fracking wastewater that's being used in California to water the our fields, to water, you know, plants and food. And that's just horrible. I mean, they, you know, it's a problem right now with all the fracking that's going on, what to do with all this wastewater. I've talked to you before about how they use the wastewater for de-icing the roads, and then that gets into our waterways. But now they're directly just spraying it on the fields in California. So there's a petition to please sign to try to keep them from doing that. And then also one on PBA, lining cans. You know, that's just a really bad thing, and there's different grocery stores that are still using it, and there's a petition to please sign to get them to stop using that chemical in the lining of our cans. But let me share with you now some things that are going on in the city that are fun, or the area. Tonight, actually, I'm hosting, along with Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, an edible and medicinal herb walk. And we're going to be just walking not only around the IE Green property, but also down the road to just see what grows wild on the side of the road. And I do live in a well, you know, a relatively manicured area, and yet there's still loads of wild stuff that you can find that you can actually eat, that you can turn into tinctures, into teas, into salves. And we're going to do that. We're actually going to make a tincture, and we're going to make some lip balm. So there's still room in the class if you're interested. You can call me or send an email to bhavani@ieatgreen.com, and we can include you in the class. July 28th, Edible New York is sponsoring the Good Beer event at, you know, with the Brooklyn Brewery, and it's going to be taking place at BAM at the Brooklyn Academy of Music from 4 to 8 p.m. It's $40. There's going to be lots of different local breweries there, lots of great food there. For $40, it's a bargain. So if you're into beer, that's the place to go. Next Tuesday, I will be having my second gluten-free vegan cooking class. This one is a Mediterranean-themed cooking class. There's space in the class, so please sign up. It's from 5:30 to 8:30 Tuesday evening. We will be harvesting the vegetables right from the on-site organic garden and then cooking up a wonderful Mediterranean menu. You can go onto my website and see the menu of what we'll be cooking. The first part of the class is a hands-on, and then the rest of it is demo style so that we can sit down and have a farm-to-table dinner following the class. August 3rd through 5th is the Food Project Institute up in Boston. This will be teaching people about producing food from seed to fork. I don't know that much about it, but look up the Food Project Institute. It looks like it's going to be a great event. Grown on Long Island Day is a free event that's taking place August 5th, and it's along with Cornell Cooperative Extension. It's going to be out at their county farm, and there will be farmers markets there, local food and wine tastings, wagon rides, farm animals, a great family event, August 5th. So check that out. August 12th through 14th is NOFA's Summer Conference. This is always a really big, wonderful coming together of farmers and people in the food community. And it takes place up at UMass in Amherst, and it's from the 12th to the 14th. So you can go onto the NOFA website for more information about that. August 13th is the New York City African Food Festival, which promises to be good. Of course, this is Restaurant Week going on this whole month. So if there's restaurants that you've been wanting to go to and haven't had an opportunity to, this is a great time to check those out. Tuesday, August 16th will be the last of my cooking classes. That's a Thai farm-to-table cooking class. Again, it will be partially hands-on and mostly demo, harvesting the vegetables from the garden and then cooking it. So that should be another wonderful class. So hopefully some of you will be able to make it to that. And September 17th is the second annual Massive Vegan Potluck, and that's taking place in Queens at a park to be announced. So I will keep you posted on that. As always, you can check my website for these events. If you have an event that you'd like me to share with my community, please send it to me. I'd be happy to do that. There's an article that was in yesterday's New York Times in the food section that I want to talk about, and it's just talking about putting food issues in the political agenda. And, you know, I work hard at, like, trying not to talk about politics on this show since it is a food show, but there is a real question as to why the food issues that I'm so passionate about and that so many of you are passionate about has not made it to the national agenda. Why are we not talking about food issues more on the political agenda? And we need to help put it there. I mean, there's, you know, it is just so important. I mean, how we grow our food, process our food, distribute our food, these are all real issues that affect our health, our local economy, and fair labor wages as well is a real issue that needs to be looked at. Food waste, we're talking about that a lot, and food safety. So, you know, these are issues that really need to be discussed, need to be talked about. Unfortunately, Hillary Clinton has not been an advocate or a supporter of labeling GMOs. She's trying to come around with pressure from Bernie Sanders' agenda, but I don't know if that's going to change the minute she's elected. But we need to just keep up the pressure. We need to let her know how we feel about GMO labeling. We need her to know about how we feel about animal welfare issues, labor issues, how our food processing affects our environment. There's so many issues, trade issues. Of course, you know, the TPP is something that she was for. That was the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And now she's saying she's not for it, but who knows if that's going to change too. But we, you know, don't have many choices here. It's Trump or Clinton. And I think it's pretty clear that of those two choices, Hillary Clinton would be more in the arena of supporting issues that I think are really important. So anyway, check out that article. It's really good. Again, it was in yesterday's food section of the New York Times, and you can find it online as well. I want to share with you a recipe that is so easy that I make all the time that I know at one point was on my website. I serve my hummus every week at a couple farmers markets where we table for slow food to spread the slow food message around, which is a nonprofit organization that's very close to my heart. In case any of you don't know what the slow food movement is, it's a pushback against fast food. It's an international organization. We have over 200 chapters in our country, and it's really about good, clean, and fair food and all the different issues I was just talking about that are connected to food, slow food takes up. So anyway, we table. I have some interns that are tabling at some local farmers markets, and I always put out some food to bring people over. And hummus is one of them, and I've been telling people, oh, the recipe's on my website, the recipe's on my website, because I know it used to be on my website. But when some people went to my website, they could not find it. So I am sharing it again because people have been asking me for it, and I've been telling them to go to my website. So after today, it will be on my website. Very easy recipe. I use canned organic chickpeas just for simplicity. Of course, you can cook up your own chickpeas, and if you're making a lot, you know, for a lot of people, it's worth it. But otherwise, the organic canned chickpeas are just great. I use Eden brand just because they also cook it with kombu, which is a seaweed that makes the beans a little less gassy, so I recommend using that brand. So you need one can of organic chickpeas, 6 tablespoons water, a half a cup of tahini. Tahini is sesame paste, the same way peanut butter is made from peanuts. Tahini is made from sesame seeds. 4 teaspoons of lemon juice, 1 tablespoon chopped garlic, 1 tablespoon cumin. And that's, just so you know, that is a little heavy on the cumin. If you want to start with 2 teaspoons of cumin, you can always add another teaspoon. You know, it's a taste thing. So depending on how you like it, you might want to go a little lighter on the cumin. 1 teaspoon dark sesame oil, 1 teaspoon tamari. I know tamari is untraditional in hummus, but I love it. And a half a teaspoon salt. Then I also use parsley or cilantro. That's optional and up to you. And then I garnish it with a little drizzle of olive oil and some pine nuts on top. And you're just going to mix all the ingredients in the food processor. You're going to pulse the chickpeas until blended. Then you're going to add the water, puree until smooth, add the remaining ingredients, and process all of it until smooth. Take a rubber spatula and, you know, scrape the sides of the Cuisinart and then food process it some more. And then you're going to put it into a bowl, and as I said, you can garnish it with some olive oil and some pine nuts, some fresh parsley. I opt usually not to put the parsley or the cilantro into the food processor because I don't want the hummus to have a greenish color. But I chop it fine and I add that at the end. So if you have it chopped, you can use the food processor just to mix it in. You know, pulse it and just mix it in. But you don't want to blend the parsley up so that it makes the hummus look green. And that's it. Very simple, very easy, and very delicious. So check that out, and of course send me any feedback on the recipes. I love hearing from you all. And now it's my pleasure to introduce my guest. As I said before, Karen Pearl is the president and CEO of God's Love We Deliver. And God's Love We Deliver is a wonderful nonprofit organization that is dedicated to delivering food to individuals who are too sick to shop or cook for themselves. And it was founded in 1985 when one woman started delivering food on her bicycle to a man dying from AIDS, and it has grown from there to now it serves, I think, 5,500 meals every day to people suffering with life-altering illnesses in New York City and the surrounding area. But I'm going to let Karen tell us more about it. Karen, are you with me?
I am. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
Good. Well, thank you so much for joining me today and doing the wonderful work that you do.
Thank you, Bhavani. I loved your intro.
Oh, good. Good. Thank you. So I just gave a brief overview of God's Love We Deliver, but could you start, go back a little bit, tell a little bit of the history of God's Love We Deliver, how it started, and why the name?
Sure. I would love to do that. Our founder, who was a hospice worker, her name was Ganga Stone, or her name is Ganga Stone, back in 1985 was asked by a friend to deliver a bag of groceries to a man who was dying of AIDS. And Ganga went to his home on her bicycle, dropped off a bag of groceries, and they got into a great conversation. So the next day, Ganga went to go check on him, see how he was doing, and she walked into his apartment. And that bag of groceries was still sitting on the counter. And she had that epiphany moment when she said, people who are really sick don't need groceries. They don't have the energy to do anything with groceries. What they need is meals, already prepared, ready to eat. And she started then bringing meals to this man named Richard. And then there was Richard and somebody else down the block. And so she started to go to a second person and a third person, and it got to be too much. And so she took people's address books, and she would call the friends of the man who was in the home sick, because at the time it was mostly men, and she would say, I'm at whoever's house. Could you come and bring him a meal tomorrow? And call another friend and say, can you bring a meal for Friday? And another friend for the weekend. And that's how we actually started to become a volunteer-based organization as well. So it was neighbors helping neighbors, really. And then over time, Ganga went from reclaiming food, meals that were made in restaurants and not delivered, to us cooking and then home delivering the meals. And one day, she was walking down the street with bags in hand to go deliver some meals, and a minister who she knew stopped her and said, Ganga, what are you doing? I see you in the neighborhood all the time with all these bags. And she said, I'm delivering meals to people who are really sick and dying of AIDS. And the minister said, you're not delivering meals, Ganga. You're delivering God's love. And she said, that's the name of our organization. So that's how we became God's Love We Deliver. And for your listeners, you may or may not remember, back in the 80s when people who were living with HIV were so stigmatized, often rejected by their family and friends, really, really isolated, to have somebody in the community say, you're delivering God's love. You're really loved and welcomed and not rejected was incredibly powerful for people. And so while we are not at all a religious organization, that name has stuck with us, and people to this day just resonate with it because it says you are part of our community.
Wow, that's beautiful. I'm all choked up. I love it. I love that story.
Yeah, it's a great story.
Yeah, yeah, it's wonderful. You know, I think that's what so often I talk about it a lot in our communities is that sense of community is missing in people's lives. I mean, you know, people, whether they used to be members of religious organizations or, you know, churches would do that for a member that's really sick. They would coordinate meals. And, you know, if you live in a neighborhood, very often if you hear that one person's sick or someone's child's sick, you know, somebody in the neighborhood will start, do that, coordinate some meals and deliveries. But it's rare. It's getting rarer and rarer for people to really extend themselves like that. And so I think
that's right.
You know,
and so many of our, we call the people we work with our clients, so many of our clients are not only sick and unable to shop or cook for themselves, but they are also really isolated. They may not have family and friends around who they could even call on, even if that sense of community still existed. And so we become their community, and they tell us, our volunteers still, 10,000 people strong, which is remarkable.
10,000 volunteers you have?
A year, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And they come to, many come to our kitchen. We use volunteers in lots of ways, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But the ones in our kitchen come and they chop up vegetables and they season the protein, whether it's chicken or fish or whatever. And what our clients tell us all the time is they know that people have made these meals for them. These are not mass-produced, because when you look at the meal, whatever, the carrots are not all uniform, or the everything has that kind of homemade look about it. It's beautiful, and it people know that our meals are made with love by people who care about other people in our community.
Mm-hmm.
And when I told the story, I don't think I said, but just for people, again, who are listening. So we started with HIV and AIDS, but over the years we have expanded our mission, and now we serve people with all life-altering illnesses. So cancer, Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's disease, heart disease, kidney disease, MS, any number of illnesses. And so if people are sick and really can't take care of their own needs, we'll be there for them in the New York metro area.
And one other thing that I was so amazed about when I was doing my little research about God's Love We Do Live was that you respond so quickly. I mean, you know, it's like if anyone else is, you know, trying to get food stamps or any other type of help, you know, governmental, I mean, there's such a process that you have to go through, and it's labor intensive and it takes time and probably more energy than people who are sick even have. But in your organization, you respond within 24 to 48 hours. How do
we
you
do
that?
Well, our organization from the very, very beginning has a set of core beliefs, and it all starts with the fact that being sick and hungry is a crisis that demands an urgent response from us. When you're sick and you call and say, I can't feed myself, I'm so sick. Think about what it takes to do that. It is such an act of bravery. And so when people call and say that to us, we know they're in crisis. And so without any kind of forms and paperwork and bureaucracy, we get a meal out to you right away with a short nutrition screening just to make sure that what we're sending you is okay for you. Like, we don't want to send somebody, whatever, fish and know that they have a fish allergy, right? That would not make sense. So there's a short nutrition questionnaire. We get your meals going right away. And then we do two things. One is we do a much longer nutrition assessment, which really helps our registered dietitian nutritionist to plan the right food for you based on your illness and your symptoms and your medications and allergies and side effects and other things. So that's one piece. And then the other piece is we help you work with your medical provider to get an eligibility letter to us that documents that what your illness is and why it is you can't shop or cook for yourself. And so over time, we do get all the documentation we need to make sure that our service is needed and to make sure that we're providing the right food. But we get you started right away because it is a crisis, and we've got to be there urgently.
Mm-hmm. So is this service open to anybody who needs it, or do you have to have a certain low income, or, you know, how does that,
so
how
I
does that make people eligible?
Right. And so there are three of them that follow from that basic premise that being sick and hungry is a crisis. One is that we will not charge our clients for their meals no matter what their income is, because if you need food to sustain yourself when you're sick, we will be there. I'll come back to the income question in a moment. The second is that we'll get you the meal right away, which we talked about. And the third is that we'll never have a waiting list because people need us when they're in that position. And so those three things are really have driven God's Love over these 31 years since we've gotten started. And so the income thing is interesting. We don't have an income requirement because, again, we believe it's a crisis. But what is, in fact, true is that over 90% of our clients live at or below the poverty level. And so you kind of pause for a moment and say, why is that? Because illness affects people of all demographics, including income. But the truth is people who have more resources in general have better ways of meeting their food needs. So they don't call on us as often because they can take care of it. They can either, people do everything from having their own chef to having food delivered to having people in their homes who may help cook. There are a variety of ways that people cook with being sick and not, cope with being sick and not having access to good food. But people who are economically challenged have another burden. They don't have those other options.
Those options, right.
So
right.
That is why most people on our program actually are struggling economically as well as with illness.
And does your program include anything else other than delivering the meals itself, or is that's the program? You don't
get involved. Well, the program is delivering meals, but in addition to that, we have nutrition counseling and nutrition education so that people, if they, for instance, are able to get better, they can take better care of themselves, right? But also along the way, they understand why they're getting the food they're getting, how to prepare it safely, all of the things that they need to take care of themselves in the moment. And then we have what we think of as special touches in our program, which we're very proud of. So every one of our clients and the children of our clients and their caregivers, who we feed as well, but get a birthday cake that's personalized on their birthday. So your birthday cake would say, happy birthday, Bhavani, right? Mm-hmm. It's really done by a professional baker who's been with us for 25 years, and everyone is personalized. So everybody gets a birthday cake, and then we send out twice a year emergency food boxes just in case something happens, like a snowstorm or an electrical outage and you can't heat your food or any number of things. We have very special holiday meals on Thanksgiving and again for what we call Winter Feast, which is whatever holiday you celebrate. It's at the end of December. And we ensure that we're always available to clients. Anyone who's on our program can call us at any time for nutrition support, nutrition education, or just to say, I saw my doctor today, and my doctor changed a medication. Does that mean I should do anything different with my food? Or should I be, you know, because people get bombarded when they see their docs, and they don't always absorb everything. This is true of all of us, absorb everything that you're hearing. And so they get confused, like, do I take this medication with food? Do I take this medication not with food? Help me figure this out. And we can work with people to look at that whole experience. And then the last thing I'd say on that is we recognize that our clients' lives are very complicated, and we help them connect to other resources that they might need, whether that's housing or mental health services.
Or transportation, I would think.
Transportation, too. Right. And so we have agreements with over 180 other organizations where we can help people make connections in the community.
Well, that's really helpful. Helping people make connections. I mean, yeah, when you're sick, I mean, sometimes even when you're healthy, doing all the things you have to do is overwhelming, right?
But
when you don't feel good, I just can't even imagine how hard doing, you know, just managing your life by yourself if you're, you know, alone. It's so hard.
It is so hard. And the very act of making a meal delivery and having somebody show up at your door and say hello and check in with you and have a conversation for a few minutes makes all the difference. It helps people know that they're not alone.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know you said you have 10,000 volunteers per year, so this is a multifaceted question.
Sure.
One, like, how do people get involved if they want to volunteer? But then also there's people that aren't volunteers that are staff. How is your organization funded so that people who actually are working there full-time are able to get paid?
Right. Like you. Very important question. So we are a very lean staff of 94 people who do everything from our finances and information technology to working, you know, our, to cooking our food, delivering it to people's homes, you know, everything that we do, serve as nutritionists, client services, representatives. So 94 people and 10,000 volunteers, which is how we get it all done. How do people volunteer? On our website, which is godslovewedeliver.org or glwd.org, which is probably easier for people. And you can sign up to become a volunteer as an individual. You can also work with our volunteer department if you're part of a corporation and you want to come and volunteer as a service day. We have lots and lots of corporations who do that. We usually have two or three corporations who come and volunteer every day. So it's a great opportunity for people to stand around the kitchen table, as we say, and get to know each other better than they ever do in the workplace.
Right.
So we have lots of ways to get involved as a volunteer. And if you don't like to work directly with food or go on a van for delivery or package up our client meals and bag them every day, we have opportunities in our offices as well. So you can work in our client services department or finance or in fundraising. We have lots of opportunities outside of the actual meal work.
So and how many volunteers will you have, like, per day? You know, like,
day,
to package up the 5,500 meals.
Yeah. In our kitchen, we probably have, I'm going to say, somewhere between 50 and 100, depending upon the day. And because we're open early in the morning. We're open before 6 in the morning, and we go until about 8 o'clock at night. So we've got 4 different shifts throughout the day, and each of them have usually 20 to 25 people there. So it's a big operation. And we've got 20 vans on the road every day, and on a great day, each one of them has a van assistant. So somebody's in there driving with our drivers throughout New York, and I will say to people, it's a great experience. You see parts of New York that you've never seen before for most of our routes, and you get a chance to see our clients and talk with them. And it's a very emotional, both in a very fulfilling way, and as well as in a, you just feel like you get so much more than you give. So lots of opportunities. And how are we funded is a great question. We are an unusual not-for-profit. So this goes to some of your intro comments about how we deal with policy around food in this country. But there is no funding stream that supports people who are sick, with the exception of HIV, where there is the Ryan White Treatment and Modernization Act, which does provide for not only medical care and medications, but also for what we think of as all of the services that support somebody in their illness, like food, transportation, housing. So with the exception of HIV, where we do get some public funding, there's there's no other funding stream. And so we have a policy arm to work on that, which we can talk about more if you'd like. So we are an unusual not-for-profit in that we raise, through philanthropy, 65% of our funding. And that is from individuals, corporations, foundations, and then, of course, things like special events, and then people who are so generous and give us gifts in their wills to create a legacy that lasts beyond their lifetime. And then, so 65% is raised through philanthropy. About 20% is through public funding, which is mostly HIV, not all, but mostly. And then about 15% we get through providing meals to people who are on managed long-term care programs, which are Medicaid programs for people who are the really sick and need a lot of home services to keep them in their homes and out of more costly settings like nursing homes and hospitals.
Wow, so you need a full-time person just to do fundraising, I would
think. Oh, yes. We have more than a person.
Right. Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah, it is a very big job, and yet raising the money to
feed people, get, you know, create meals for people that are nutritionally sound and individually tailored is something that people really resonate with. And so we've got online campaigns that people want to go and watch, look at our website, and things like celebrate with a plate around Thanksgiving or just donate a meal. Every meal is $10. So you can make a real difference in somebody's life for $10. And, of course, many people donate more than that, and we're very, very grateful for our community of supporters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. So you recently moved locations, right? You're in a new building, the Michael Kors building.
We are.
In Soho. That's the one that I went to, right? The one
yes.
where there was that event with Michael Anthony?
Yes. Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes. So we actually are back home in some ways. We moved to Soho in we bought a very tiny two-story building in Soho in 1993. We renovated. We moved in on World AIDS Day in 1995, and we were there for almost 20 years, had a great, great run. And then we found ourselves, as we continued to grow and do more and more and more meals to more and more people, we were not able to scale up. And I mentioned earlier that we had a core principle that we're never going to have a waiting list, and we were finding ourselves either have to have a waiting list or have to have more space. And so we started a campaign to raise funds to basically take that old building down to the steel and then raise it up and expand it. And we were so fortunate to have Michael Kors as our lead gift for the campaign, as well as New York City, which gave us a very generous capital gift, and then many, many other people who supported us in just beautiful fashion. And so for 22 months, we moved from Soho out to Brooklyn, and we, without missing a beat, we literally moved over a weekend, and we're back up and running on Monday morning. We
do not work on the weekend? Is this a Monday through Friday service?
We actually are open 6 days. So we work Sunday through Friday.
Uh-huh.
But we did not miss one delivery in this
transition.
We moved to Brooklyn, 22 months. We rebuilt on our own site, the Michael Kors building at God's Love We Deliver. And we moved back just a year ago. So it's been great. The new building has a beautiful 10,000-square-foot industrial kitchen, where we can host lots and lots and lots of volunteers and both do our cooking and our baking right there on site. And then we've got a covered loading dock. And one of the things we added, which is turned out to be so great, is we have a rooftop garden where we grow herbs for all of our meals. So for three seasons of the year, our chefs can go up, clip whatever, rosemary, basil, thyme, all sorts of great stuff to use in our meals, because all of our meals are low sodium, and then on top of that, they're all really, really tasty. And I wanted to say, again, based on your intro, that all of our meals are what I think you would call pure, based on your intro. No fillers, mm-hmm. no preservatives, no additives. It's food.
Real food.
Real food, fresh vegetables, fruits, you know, really good proteins, and, again, all, I hesitate to say home-cooked because it's cooked in our kitchen. It's not cooked in somebody's home, but home-cooked in the sense of done with lots of love by lots and lots of individuals whose
right.
energy
it's not
go
an
into
industrial,
it.
It's not an industrial kitchen.
Right.
I mean, it is an industrial kitchen size-wise, but it's not
right
mass-produced type feeling.
Exactly.
I get it.
Exactly.
I get it.
You'll see actual people making the food rather than lots and lots of equipment.
And how do you source your food? Do you have streams of people, you know, places that give you donated food? You know, we've been talking so much about food waste. I mean, if you go to Hunts Point Market, I mean, the amount of food that they throw out that is good and edible, do you get
right.
to recover any of that stuff? To
we
help
don't
your...
recover that. We're fortunate that in New York City we have lots of other food partners and most of the reclaimed food gets picked up by City Harvest and other organizations. But what we do is we do work with local dairy farmers to get a lot of our local milks and things like that that we use. And then we work with Grow NYC to get a lot of produce and fruits. And then we work with other purveyors on our major food deliveries. We're doing 1.5 million meals a year. That is a lot of food. And it's all tailored. And we're serving it to people who are sick. So we're kind of careful about food donations. We need to make sure that the food is completely moved from place to place to place in a safe, food-safe manner.
Sure.
So that we're giving people the highest quality food that we can possibly do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that is very important for everybody, but especially mm-hmm. when people have an already compromised immune system.
Correct.
So let's see. So from the look of the last 30 years, we know you're always evolving, growing, and changing mm-hmm. to expand your services and provide your clients with the best care. What changes in innovations are coming up, and what changes in innovations have you brought to God's
right.
To God's yeah. love we deliver?
One of the things that I'm really proud about is that because we say and mean that nutrition is our signature difference, we are constantly paying attention to the evolution of nutrition science and plowing that back into, if I may use that metaphor, into the meals that we produce. So I'll give you an example. This goes back a ways, and then I'll come to the current innovations. We used to, because our program was based on HIV, we were very focused on providing a lot of food with a lot of calories because people with HIV were wasting away. And so mm-hmm. the more you could get them to eat and the more they could keep up muscle mass and body fat and all of that, the better they were doing, right? And then antiretrovirals came on, people started living longer, we expanded our mission, we were serving people with other illnesses, and it became really clear that that menu wasn't the right menu anymore because people now needed much more balanced meals. They needed less fat, fewer calories, more fruits and vegetables, you know, more whole grains, all those good things that we all know mm-hmm. about. And so we completely revamped our menu. Then a year or so after that, we do serve all the clients that are in our program who have children. We know that when there's a sick parent in the home, the whole family structure is at risk. So we also feed the children of our clients. And we had one of those light bulb moments when we said, why are we giving kids adult food? Most kids don't eat adult food. So we revamped our children's menu so that all of the children's meals are equally healthy and based on nutrition, but are what we like to say more kid-friendly. So rather mm-hmm. than whatever, a big piece of something, it's, you know, chicken that may be cut into smaller pieces or tinier meatballs or whatever, things that kids want to eat. All very healthy, nothing fried, none of that, but it's much more kid-friendly, and our kids love it.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been over the time always keeping our menu and our program up to current science. So when we made this transition to Brooklyn and now still back in Soho, we also moved from a model that some of our food was hot, some of our food was frozen, which is a really difficult delivery model because in one vehicle, it's hard to keep things both hot and frozen. So we mm-hmm. turned everything into frozen. We, in our new kitchen, have blast freezers, which takes food from hot to frozen in almost no time. And so all of the nutrients get preserved, all of the color, all of the freshness. And then when our clients reheat them, the food is beautiful and tasty and colorful and appetizing because we eat first with our eyes before we taste anything. We're looking at it, and everything comes out really great. And so that we did that as we moved back, well, as we moved to Brooklyn and now back. In this coming year, on our plate for new innovations is we're starting some breakfast for some of our clients, and we will be cooking the breakfast, some of the breakfast items in our kitchen, again, all healthy and with the freshest of ingredients. And we're going to be packaging those out probably starting this fall, which we're really, really excited about. And we are, as I said, we're using the herbs in our kitchen, from our rooftop garden in our kitchen, which is great. And when we've just rolled out, we're probably 90% of the way through with a new meal packaging container, I guess is the best way to say it, which is completely food safe and has a film on the top rather than a lid, so our clients can actually see the meals and make decisions about what it is they want to eat based on how they're feeling. Mm-hmm. So it's all going to be much more client, I want to say friendly, for lack of a better word, so that it's not, you eat with your eyes and you can look in and say, ooh, I'm kind of in the mood for this. And that's what you choose to eat. And all of that will really help people to get the nutrition. You know, we can do all the best cooking in the world and get everything packaged and delivered without a hitch. But the real sort of rubber hitting the road moment is our clients need to eat the meals, because that's where you get the benefit. And so we are doing everything to make it look, the food to be packaged in a way and presented in a way that makes them want to dig in and, you know, eat the entire meal.
Mm-hmm. So this question just came from, I didn't realize that you were delivering frozen meals. So if you're delivering frozen meals, do you deliver a week's worth of meals to a client one time so that you're not delivering every day? I guess I was imagining that you were delivering hot meals every day to these clients. So if you're doing frozen, that probably means you can deliver less often.
We can deliver less often, and we made these decisions based on client surveys. So we surveyed all of our clients before we made any changes, and what they told us is that their lives have gotten pretty complicated from a medical perspective, and being home every single day for a delivery was not possible for them. In fact, some of our clients, and the most obvious example is somebody, for instance, let's say, who goes to dialysis for kidney disease. They are in dialysis 3 days a week. They can't be home. They're there for 4 or 5 hours at a time.
Right.
And if you add to that waiting for transportation there, waiting for transportation home, they're gone all day. So based on what our clients told us, we made the decision to go all frozen. We deliver to most clients twice a week, but we have a fair number of clients who've actually asked for only 1 day a week delivery, because, again, if I go back to that renal client, they're out 3 days a week. Their fourth day, they may be seeing the doctor. They can only say, I will definitely stay home on whatever, Tuesday. And so we go to them on that day when we know they can be there to get their food. And, again, we survey clients all the time, every year. They tell us about the delivery experience, the food experience, to make sure that we are doing what they need, not what's good for us, but what's good for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. And I know I touched on the sourcing of the food.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean to be critical, it's just a question. Do you pay any attention to GMOs or antibiotic-free poultry, that kind of thing? Do you have time to do that, or do you have to just use what you're given and go with it?
I'm not 100% sure about the answer to that. I know that our culinary staff pays a lot of attention to what comes in and what they order and from whom they order it, but I can't tell you 100%
mm-hmm. Right.
Exactly where we are on that. And I don't hear that as critical. I think we all, over time, have, again, do our very best to get the very best food for our clients. And I'm hoping one day this moves into the policy side of our world, as we look at what we consider to be food as medicine, that the food we're giving people is part and parcel of their overall medical engagement to make sure that they can be as healthy as possible, that we are trying to get people the very, very best. And one day, there should not be a big price differential between, let's say, chicken with antibiotics, chicken without antibiotics. We should be having a food supply that has no antibiotics in it.
Absolutely.
And so we want those things to happen because we know those things are the best for our clients. I don't know specifically where we are on that on each of the different issues right now, but mm-hmm. I do know that we, because nutrition is our signature difference, we are working hard to get funding for food as medicine to make sure that people who are sick get healthy, nutritious meals prepared for them that are delivered to their home when they need them, and at the same time working to get for our clients as much locally sourced food as we can, and again, everything being healthy and cooked, as I said, without preservatives, any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's very hard, especially, you know, when you are relying on donations and, you know, sourcing from, you know, you have to use what your purveyor has. I mean, there's other purveyors, but, you know, we know cost is an issue, and that's, you know, something I struggle with a lot of times when I'm promoting, you know, the foods that I promote, mm-hmm. which are, you know, GMO-free and antibiotic-free, organic when possible. I know this day and age they're more expensive, and I'm, you know, and I don't want to be alienating. You know, it's certainly better for someone to eat vegetables than not eat vegetables, even if they're not organic. Because if they're not eating the vegetable, they're eating some other
right.
junk usually. So yep. it's better to eat an unorganic broccoli than it is to eat potato chips.
I would agree.
Right. So, you know, so you have to pick your fights, but, you know, it's something that, you know, when I try to advocate for organic, I want the price to be reasonable for everybody. And yet, you know, it's always tough when you hear like Walmart starting to carry organics. You know how Walmart does business. You don't want them to be ripping off the farmer either, you know. You want
right.
I know how much work it is to grow something organically, and the farmer needs to be compensated. So
right.
it's all, you know, everything's connected, and they're all tough issues. Nothing's simple.
Nothing is simple, and to the degree that we get more and more larger corporations wanting to be able to purchase and have on their shelves healthier and healthier food, all of that structure will change, because it has to. I mean, right now, you know, our organic farmers in general are smaller than bigger farms. If we could have some of the big farms use better growing practices, that would be fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I'm sure you've heard, you know, there's big corporations like General Mills and others, I think even McDonald's, that are starting to pay to help their farmers, to help farmers transition towards organic, because with the demand of people wanting healthier food, right now there's not enough of it.
That's right.
We need to get some of these industrial farmers to start, mm-hmm. you know, going back to organic practices so that they can meet the demand.
Right. Right. And that'll be
yeah.
great. I mean, I you know, we know from our clients, even though they on their own may not be able to afford the food that we provide for them and the quality and the nutritional value, we know how much they appreciate and value the good food. They, you know, they tell us all the time, I would have died without your meals. They know it.
Oh, uh-huh.
Now, we've had people who call, and they'll say things like, all I've eaten for the last month is ice cream because it feels good. And then, you know, they're on our program for a couple of weeks, a month, whatever, and they say, oh, my God, I didn't know how much better I could feel with good food. So people really appreciate access to good food that's nutritionally based and that addresses their particular circumstances. Now, if you're well, you don't necessarily have particular circumstances, and if you're eating healthy, you will at least lower your risk of developing some kind of chronic illness. But as people age and our whole society is aging, more and more people will have some kind of chronic illness, hopefully not life-threatening, but that they will be managing. And food has, good food, nutritious food, has got to be part of the solution for all of us. Obviously for our clients, ever more important because mm-hmm. they're struggling with illness.
Yeah. Well, you use the motto, food is medicine, and you know, I do too, and I think, you know, more and more people are starting to come to that. Is, you know, there's something wrong with the picture when you see a new pharmacy opening on every corner, and every time there's something wrong, you know, they're trying to come up with a new drug, and mm-hmm. people just aren't looking to their food enough to deal with some of these chronic illnesses and problems. And, you know, I think the fact that you really bundle it all together and have nutritional counseling as well, and, you know, really look as food as medicine, it's just a very important piece that I think is missing in so many other food.
I agree. The healthcare arena really is starting to embrace more and more food as medicine and the importance of good nutritious food in the healthcare outcomes that the systems are looking for, most especially lowered costs. By giving people nutritionally based home-delivered meals when they are sick, we are helping to keep people in their homes. And that is reducing the healthcare costs across the board. Fewer hospitalizations if people are hospitalized, shorter stays in the hospital, more people go home rather than to a nursing home or a rehab center after hospitalization. All the research is showing that food has an enormous impact on people's, on the healthcare costs that people are sustaining or systems are sustaining, and on patient satisfaction, which is one of the most important markers for how we're doing in reforming our healthcare system. And so we are doing a lot of advocacy around food as medicine and the critical nature when people are looking at things like healthcare costs. Don't just look at how much they go to the doctor and how much access they have to medications. All that is very important. We're not taking anything away from that. We're just saying also look at providing people with food and nutrition because you will get that extra lift. It's a very low-cost intervention for a lot of gain. And mm-hmm. that is starting to resonate, and we're very proud of that, and we're doing that with food and nutrition providers like God's Love We Deliver around the country, and we're seeing really positive changes, and uh-huh. healthcare people are waking up, and I love that.
And is your model replicable? Have you seen other cities follow your model?
Oh, yeah. We have sister organizations, most of whom got started in serving people with HIV way back, somewhere between mm-hmm. 25 and 30 years ago. So there are sister organizations in Boston, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., San Francisco, L.A., Minnesota, Atlanta, Chicago. But again, they
tend great.
To be cities.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And you know, the big, big, big goal over time is this is across the country. This is not
right.
just in the big cities. Everybody who is sick and alone needs access.
Okay, well, you know what? We're just about out of time, so really fast. Anybody who's listening, if you want to volunteer, go to God's Love We Deliver's website. Karen, you want to share it again?
GodsLoveWeDeliver.org or GLWD.org.
Perfect. Karen, thank you so much.
Thank you
for
so
joining
much.
Us. You're welcome. And everybody out there, thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'll see you all again next week.